I'd like to call for a caucus. It's the Ricardo Project, and today we are talking about Season 2, Episode 19, Club Election. Hello, my beautiful Tropicanas. Welcome back to the Ricardo Project, the podcast where we watch through I Love Lucy episode by episode and talk about its historical, emotional, and comedic impact. My name is Dana, and I am so glad that you've joined me today for Season 2, Episode 19, The Club Election, which premiered 70 and a half years ago today on February 16th, 1953. Before we hop into the episode, I'd like to give a very special listener shout out to two wonderful listeners this week. I'm going to try to start doing this because, like, the community we have here is so unbelievable to me. I'd like to shout out Christopher, who chats with me on Instagram. He's wonderful, gives me a lot of advice on parenting and a lot of amazing notes, basically on every episode. He's really spectacular. Hi, Christopher. I hope you're having a great week. And then I'd also like to shout out Fran, who very kindly sent me a tip on PayPal at the end of every single episode and in every single show notes. I list a bunch of ways you can support the show. One of them is to provide a one-time tip via PayPal, and Fran very kindly did so. And left this really sweet note that meant a lot to me. So thank you, Fran. I try really hard to make every way that you can financially support the show allow you to get something back. So there's a spread shop store with some like minimalistic I Love Lucy merch. There's my bookshop links, which, you know, if you buy any of the books that are like in my little storefront, I get like a commission on those and you get your book. There are a lot of books that I Love Lucy fans might like anyway. PayPal is kind of the one way that you can just send me a tip, and it feels weird asking for it every time that I record my outro, but it's sincerely, sincerely appreciated. It means the world to me. I do have aspirations of creating a Patreon for this show, and I know I should probably do it sooner rather than later because we're almost a third of the way through the show, but I didn't really feel okay about creating one so close to coming back from hiatus, and I didn't want to create one before I had the baby last year because, as you could see, I needed a little break. And I want to be sure that before I ask any of you to make a recurring contribution for benefits, of course, for bonus episodes and things like that, that I have proved to you that you'll be getting really consistent content. So without further ado, let's hop in to an episode I was actually very surprised at how much I loved this episode. Spoiler alert for my analysis, but let's hop in to the club election. We opened with a very exciting scene. Ricky is sitting on the couch giving a bottle to the baby, their home. It's so exciting. Ethel comes in. We get this really cute little baby close-up. We still don't get his name. This entire like pre-screen, they call him Sweetie or the baby. I am very intrigued to see how they reveal that his name is Little Ricky. I wonder, I should ask Sarah this because I feel like this came up in her research. Maybe I'll ask when I see her in a couple of weeks. But I wonder if they were like advertising that his name was Little Ricky, if it was just kind of a non-kept secret, or if they are building up for some big reveal. I honestly don't remember, so this will be really interesting. And I watched the episodes in order. I haven't watched the next few episodes yet, so I'm very intrigued to see how they kind of reveal Little Ricky's name. But anyway, Ethel mentions that she just came up to tell Lucy that the Wednesday afternoon Fine Arts League is meeting on Friday this week. Turns out they never meet on Wednesday despite their name because it's just not feasible in anybody's schedule, which is a fun bit because you'd think they would just change the name of the club, but that's okay. Ethel tells Ricky this meeting is really important because it's time to nominate officers again. The baby makes his dissent known with this gigantic, hilarious babbling noise. And it leads us to our flashback where Ricky does his big, like, remember last time this happened, and then the harp music plays. We go to Lucy in her beautiful polka dot dress, or a beautiful polka dot dress. I don't actually think it's the same one. And she's setting up for the club meeting. And she tells Ricky that they're nominating officers today because, of course, flashback. Lucy is so confident that she's going to be nominated for every office. She has acceptance speeches written for each one. And I was thinking to myself, actually, as this episode went, I was like, what role would Lucy actually get? Because she's not super organized, as we would lead to believe. So I don't think being secretary is great for her. She's terrible with money. She should not be the treasurer. I think vice president makes a lot of sense because it's not like the main responsibility. But I get that like having Lucy be in a position of power would be good because then she can kind of leverage Ricky. And I think that's very useful for this club, given what we know about it. So, I can see her being like vice president. What they should have is like a director of activities position. She's perfect for that. Anyway, so Ricky's like, ugh, I hate this club. Bye. He just like yeets himself right out of there. Ethel comes in. She's quickly followed by one of my very favorite supporting characters, Lillian, soon to be Carolyn Appleby. I love Carolyn Appleby. I know her name's Lillian in this episode. She's Carolyn the next time we see her. I think I actually realized as I was reviewing my notes that I wrote her name as Cara Lillian, so that's what I'll be calling her. I love Cara Lillian Appleby. She is so fun. Dora Singleton, who plays her, just has such a great energy. It's so different than everybody else's. She is fabulous. I love the antagonistic dynamic between her and Lucy. It's like the original frenemies. Cara Lillian and Ethel have like this kind of fun relationship. Like, she's just a great addition. And I'm a huge fan of this new dynamic. And I love seeing them have friends outside of the core four. I know that I'm kind of getting into analysis during the review, but she's a very welcome addition for me. So Cara Lillian and Ethel fawn over this cashmere sweater that Lucy's wearing. It has all this like gorgeous beading and this matching little ball purse. I'm not a fan of the purse, but I do have to say I love the sweater. I don't really know how you put that amount of beading onto a cashmere sweater. Like, they must have reinforced it or something, because the weight of those beautiful like pearls and beads, and it's gorgeous, honestly. And I was kind of like, ooh, decorative, like really cool beaded sweaters. We should go back to that. And Cara Lillian agrees because she says she's always wanted one, but she can't afford it. And she goes into a gossip rant, and then the other ladies show up and kind of intervene with that. And the meeting begins. Before they go into the nominations, they vote to allow a new member, Ruth Knickerbocker, into the club. She's been nominated by Cara Lillian, and she'll be at the next meeting. She's not there right now, but that's great. They have a new member. And now it's on to the voting. So there are four positions. There's treasurer, secretary, vice president, and president. And we go through that nominating structure just in that order, and it all follows the exact same structure. So I'm only going to say it once. So someone stands. They give this huge speech about how they have the perfect person for the position and they're the best, most wonderful, kindest, loveliest person in the world. And Lucy's like puffed up and she's like about to stand right as the name gets announced. And every single time the nominator says someone else in the group. So it's Grace Munson, it's Marion Strong, it's Lillian Appleby. So it's Grace Munson, it's Marion Strong, it's Cara Lillian Appleby. And Lucy deflates for a minute. Ethel always says, oh, you'll be a wonderful such and such. And then Lucy whispers about why that position is terrible. I wouldn't be treasurer if you paid me. Oh, secretary's really a thankless job. Now it's time for the president. And the chair gives a speech about how there's only one person who could possibly be president. And right as Lucy sticks her hand out to shake it, she basically hands the gavel to Ethel. Lucy can't take it anymore. She leaps up and she says that the democratic way to do this would be to have two nominees. Not because she doesn't believe in Ethel, just because like it would be, it's like it's the democratic way. Like, you know, we're in America, democracy. And when everybody kind of pauses because nobody can think of anyone else to nominate besides Ethel, Lucy jumps up again and asks for a caucus because she just watched the conventions, which is adorable. And she grabs Cara Lillian and takes her to the kitchen. There's a little bit of a pause while they're in there, and Ethel has this fantastic throwaway line where she says, television really has changed people. She wouldn't have had the brains to know what a caucus was this time last year. And they're all kind of yelling at each other. And then someone randomly, like, you can barely hear it because they're all talking over each other. But one of the guest actresses yells at Ethel, "You ought to filibuster," which I didn't catch until the second time I watched this episode for my notes. That is so funny. I had to rewind. Anyway, this all comes to an abrupt end when Kara Lillian comes out of the kitchen and she's wearing Lucy's sweater and nominates her for president. Lucy acts all surprised and then tries, you know, gives her big speech about the democratic process again while Ethel's just like, you know, sneak. So later, the Mertzes are about to play bridge with the Ricardos, and Ricky is, forgive my language, Ricky's a little shitster. He holds up some signs that Lucy's made, you know, that say like, oh, Lucy for president, including one that says Nerds to Mertz. And Ethel's like, what the hell? And then Fred has to pipe in and say that Ethel wrote even ruder ones, and the girls are officially embattled. It blows up so fast. And Ricky has this like dumbstruck face as Ethel is storming out, as though he didn't just cause all this. I was watching with my husband, and my husband was yelling at the TV. He's like, Ricky, what are you doing? You're an idiot. So things are officially on. In the next scene, Lucy exchanges her round handbag, the one that matched the sweater she already gave Kara Lillian. She's giving the round handbag to Kara Lillian to complete the ensemble, calling all the club members to find out who they're voting for. And the girls are tied. Kara Lillian is very sneaky too. She, you know, kind of just has a conversation and then at the end goes like, oh, right. And like, who are you voting for? Oh, that's a great choice. Blah, blah, blah. Hangs up. She is a sneak thief, that one. So they figure out pretty quickly that Ruth Knickerbocker, the new member who we brought up earlier, is going to cast the deciding vote because it's 6 versus 6. And so Lucy says that she's going to have to butter her up very quickly. And actually, as I'm going through this out loud, I'm realizing there's a lot of very short scenes. This is a really staccato episode in that way. There's nothing super long and drawn out. Anyway, we see that the girls are both out with Ruth trying to woo her. And we know that because Ricky is at the apartment eating like what I can only describe as like old timey hobo food, because he's eating pork and beans out of the can. And Fred comes in to check on him and he says, oh, I had the same thing, because both of the girls have been out desperately trying to get Ruth's vote. Ricky and Fred exchange all these barbs about how they're both going to suffer if their wives are the presidents of this club. Ricky does make the very valid point that his life is hard enough just with Lucy being Lucy, which normally I would hate because I'd be like, ugh, you're just like being mean about your wife. But like, no, Lucy's a handful. She's exhausting. You don't need her being the president and thinking, oh, I'm the president, which means that I have to do this and I have to do that. Like, she really shouldn't be president. She also didn't come by it honestly. Fred should be very proud of his wife. She was the unanimous decidee until Lucy popped in. But it doesn't matter because they each hope that Ruth will vote for the other woman. And they both decide kind of in the exact same moment the light bulb goes on and they have to woo Ruth Knickerbocker. So Fred runs downstairs. Ricky runs to grab the phone book, but realizes that he's going to have to call information to ask for Ruth Knickerbocker's number. He cannot figure out how to spell Knickerbocker at all, which is a very fun callback to the psychiatrist joke from the last episode where he looks up psychiatrist under F and can't find it. He is shocked to find out that it's with a K, but he calls her and he calls her Miss Knickerbocker, which is again, a very funny throwaway joke. There's a lot of them in this episode. No lines are wasted. Ugh, I'm getting ahead of myself. Anyway, he invites her to go to his show. She's already going out with Freddie Mertz because Mr. Mertz can be quite light on his feet when he wants to win a competition. But it works out for Ricky because Fred is so sneaky and he brought her to the Tropicana for their like quote unquote date. Now, I created my own little bit of like I Love Lucy lore about why Fred would bring Ruth Knickerbocker to the Tropicana for this when he's trying to beat Ricky at a game. And I know the reason is because then they're both in the same space. Like, I get it. I get that it's just completely so that the writers have it easy and they didn't have to make a new set. However, I like to think that Fred did this because he knows everyone at the Tropicana because he's Ricky's best friend. And so he gets some sort of a discount or he gets extra stuff and he's a cheapskate and he can make Ruth think that he's like spending a lot of money on her. So Ricky's singing his song. He's doing great. He sees Fred dancing with Miss Knickerbocker. And how do I describe her? She's dressed like one of the aunts from Arsenic and Old Lace or something. Yep, that's a good description. She's dressed like an aunt from Arsenic and Old Lace. She's like approximately 400 years old, looking like Sarah Winchester right before she built the mystery house. That's the visual. So Ricky decides that this is his moment to act. He changes the music and he turns on the super, super Ricardo charm. He puts his hat on an angle that the angle of the hat alone is enough to make you swoon. I don't know how he's doing this. If anybody else did that, I would be like, what? A stunad. But no, he looks incredible. Truly incredible. He gives Mrs. K the most wolfish, lecherous eyes in the world. He sings Cielito Lindo to her. He brings her on stage to dance. She is so happy. This is like the dream. It's honestly adorable. She's having the time of her life. And the actress who plays her, Ida Moore, we'll get to her in a minute, is killing it at playing the like, oh my God, I got plucked from the audience. What's going to happen next? A lot of times I feel like in the show, Ricky has like pulled people up from the audience and it's almost like they already know what's going to happen. I think we talked about it in, what was it? Pregnant Women Are Unpredictable when he sings Cheek to Cheek to Lucy for like 12 years. And I talked about how she had to change her facial expression every 10 seconds or so to like keep herself interested. And it was a lot of work. This chick does a number that is not as long, but you know, quite long. And she does such a good job of being very, very present. This is a good actress. I'm a fan of hers. So the number ends and the boys immediately try to pitch their cases, but the ladies burst in and they tell us they've made up and they took the vote and they tied and they're going to be co-presidents. It's all good. You know, well, there you go. All done. Because it was a tie vote because Ruth was homesick and the boys are like, no, Ruth is right here. Hello. And it turns out that that's not Ruth. That's Ruth's mother-in-law. And when they ask her why she didn't say anything, she said, and I quote, well, I didn't want to spoil the fun. At my age, you don't get many chances. Randy old lady. And that randy old lady is how we end the episode. My analysis for this episode isn't very thrilling because honestly, I loved it. I don't have much to say. This is exactly what I love in an I Love Lucy episode. For me, it's got nearly everything. Nearly. Because there's no like humongous laugh out loud moment like in, I don't know why this is the first example that's coming to my head, but like in Bonus Bucks when she gets fully starched and has to like walk sideways with her like lips puckered or, you know, obviously like Vita Vita Vegemite or the Chocolate Factory. But it is a perfect day-to-day episode of I Love Lucy. I'm fine with there being no big laugh out loud moment like that, though, because the exchange we get for that is that it's a Lucy and Ethel centered episode, and those are my favorites. There's just so much to love about this episode, the dynamics of the club, everyone fawning over how great Ethel is, which is always just a really fun thing for Lucy to kind of get put in her place a little bit. Lucy playing from the bottom and being really scrappy. There's so many great little lines, like I said earlier, the you want a filibuster or Ricky pronouncing Knickerbocker Knickerbocker once he finds out there's a K in it. The sight gag of Kara Lillian getting the sweater. So much subtlety and sneak jokes. Like I said earlier, no line is wasted in this. This episode gets a lot done and there's not 1 minute of wasted airtime. It's a really great episode. And I mean, like, is it the most satisfying that the girls make up off camera? Like, no, fine, whatever. But I don't care because the guys flirting with the Victorian ghost that is Mrs. Knickerbocker is way more fun. This episode is a blast to watch. And more importantly, it's a blast to rewatch. And I do think that that's something we're not exploring that much on this podcast that I really want to start thinking about a little more critically. I love some of these episodes, but I'll never watch them again. And that doesn't really contribute to the longevity of the show. You know, we talk a lot about the longevity of the show from like cultural perspectives, right? Is the show rewatchable and is the show still funny in 2023? I Love Lucy is the creator of the rerun. No one ever had to worry about rewatchability before this show. And it was around this time that rewatchability it became a consideration and that reruns were starting to get activated for I Love Lucy. And I do wonder what kind of impact that had on the writing. Because this episode has so many little things, little moments that I didn't catch until the second time around. I didn't catch Knickerbocker. I didn't catch You Oughta Filibuster. And there's more that I would probably catch if I watched it a third time right now. And that makes for a really satisfying relationship to a show. You know, I think my generation, the millennials, thinks a lot about rewatching from a comfort perspective. I do think that's the main reason to rewatch I Love Lucy is for the comfort. But I also think that there's a lot to be said for like the mental stimulation of participating in something multiple times. It's like one of the reasons why people like watching murder mysteries, right? You watch the murder mystery, you find out who did it, and then you watch it again and you see all the clues leading up to it. And I think something like a really, really well-written comedy like I Love Lucy has that too. You watch it again and you pick up on all the artistry. You pick up on all the subtlety. Because that's the real comedic genius of I Love Lucy for me, besides Lucille Ball's just incredible talent, is that the show isn't just Lucille Ball being a star. The show is also three writers writing brilliantly, you know, doing excellent writing. And the show's not just great physical comedy. It's also these great little verbal jokes. It's also about tone and pacing and rhythm. They're firing on all cylinders. And so as a result, you can rewatch a good episode of I Love Lucy for 10 different things. The first time I watched it just to enjoy it. And my number one takeaway was like, oh, it's about Lucy and Ethel. How great. The second time I watched it, I was like, oh, this is really fun. This is about power plays and dynamics and the dynamics of like female friendships across the board, because this is just as much about Cara Lillian as it is about Ethel. I would argue Cara Lillian, I think, has almost more time than Ethel. And then you have the guys coming into it. And all of these dynamics together make for a really dynamic experience that you can watch repeatedly and still laugh at. And that's really the genius, I think, of the show. And what really contributes to its longevity is that it's not just one joke. It's not just one funny thing. It's 100 funny things all happening at once. So speaking of those iconic characters and dynamics, that leads me right into historical notes. So this episode, as we said, marked the first appearances of Marion Strong and Cara Lillian Appleby. And the next time Marion Strong's going to be played by someone else, it's one of the best little fight performances ever. That'll be Shirley Mitchell. Her voice work is great. We also get another Hazel Pierce, a.k.a. Lucy's stand-in, sighting. She plays Grace Munson. And Doris Singleton plays Cara Lillian Appleby. Her name was originally Lillian Appleby after Lucille Ball's favorite elementary school teacher, but ultimately they just didn't, I don't know why they changed it to Carolyn. I did read that at one point they were like, okay, Lillian's not working. Lillian's not right for her. What if we named her Doris after Doris Singleton and we just let her be named Doris Appleby? And Doris didn't want to do that for whatever reason. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure what led to that decision, but ultimately they got to Carolyn. Now, I'll go over Doris Singleton in more detail in an episode that she's a little more front and center in. She will show up plenty of times, don't worry. But I did think it was an interesting thing to note that the earliest IMDb credit that I could find for Doris Singleton was 1952. And she was in her early 30s at this point. And I just thought that was like really cool that this is one of her first roles. And I'm not 100% sure where she came from. I want to do more research on her, but there was a lot of things to look at for this episode. So that's why I want to give her kind of her own breathing room space in a later episode. But Mrs. Knickerbocker is played by Ida Moore, who truly was fabulous in her role. I thought she was an exquisite actress. She has almost 100 IMDb credits to her name, including a couple of episodes of The George and Gracie Show. And she seems to have just really made the rounds on television. She was on Ozzie and Harriet, The Jack Benny Show, Alfred Hitchcock Presents. Never for more than a couple episodes at a time, but she seems to have really, you know, been around the block a little bit. And she's great, truly exceptional. I was a huge fan of her work on the show, and I wish that we saw her again. The last guest star note that I have is that the baby cries in the scene that introduced the flashback, you know, the ones we talked about at the beginning, were actually done by an adult, which I thought when watching it that maybe it was Pepita the Clown coming back, but it was actually by Jerry Hausner, who plays Ricky's agent, Jerry. So that was kind of a fun little thing. Two other historical notes are that on February 18th of 1953, which was 2 days after this episode aired, and just a couple weeks after Lucy and the show won their Emmy Awards, Lucy and Desi signed an $8 million deal to continue with I Love Lucy through 1955, which would be the end of the show. Fantastic. According to Dana's inflation station, that's like almost $100 million. So really, truly great for them. Fantastic. They very much deserved it. But I mean, if you can only imagine how much money that was. Finally, I want to address the club election scene when Lucy talks about caucuses. She says, when she wants a caucus, she says, you know, didn't you watch the conventions on television? And it's one of the few political references that we get in the show, kind of, or one of the few topical references. The Democratic and Republican National Conventions happened in July of 1952. Now, this episode premiered in February of 1953, but was filmed in September of 1952 to allow for Lucille Ball's pregnancy and her maternity leave. This was a really big deal. 70 million people tuned in to watch these conventions that ended in the nominations of Stevenson and Eisenhower. Now, there is a very popular myth that Stevenson lost the election because he would interrupt airings of I Love Lucy with like these hour-long campaign ads. It's just a myth, but it's a fun one. There's another myth that Stevenson received a telegram from a Lucy fan that read, "I love Lucy, so I hate you," which is honestly very funny. I highly doubt that's why he lost. I'm sure he lost for some other true reason, but it's kind of fun lore to think about. That's all the notes that I have. So let's talk about what we're watching next week. We're going to be watching The Black Eye. Here's the log line for that. Lucy and Ricky are engrossed in a thrilling novel, and they decide to read it aloud to enjoy it at the same time. That's really cute. When Ricky tosses the book to Lucy for her to put it away, it accidentally hits her in the face, giving her a black eye. Trouble begins when Fred and Ethel overhear the dialogue from the novel, and a misunderstanding begins. Okay, so that's where we'll pick up next week. Thank you so much for listening. How to reach me, how to support the show are all going to play in the outro, which is starting right now. Thank you so much for listening to The Ricardo Project. It means more to me than I could possibly express. If you would like to get in touch with me for any reason whatsoever, I would love to hear from you. You can reach me at theRicardoProject@gmail.com, on Instagram at TheRicardoProject. You can support the podcast by buying minimalistic I Love Lucy merch, a book off of the bookshop link in the show notes below, giving me a one-time tip via PayPal, whatever your heart desires. The best way to support this show, though, is to rate and review on Apple Podcasts and share this episode with your friends. But just you listening to the episode is truly enough for me. Makes my little heart sing. I hope you have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you next week for The Black